and welcome to a Neuroscience episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles.
Yahoo!
Didn't dawn on me till just now that our sound guy is not on the show yet. So, as Roddy Cat goes to add the Google effects, I'm your host.
Oh,
I can see it, I guess.
Okay.
Since yeah, it popped up on the thing saying that you were doing it.
Yeah, okay, anyway.
I am your host, Tim DLGG, and tonight I'm joined by at PCN underscore dirt on Twitter.
Yay. Hi, guys. I'm the cranky old man.
Also from popculturenetwork.com. And also here tonight, we have Roddy Cat joining us again.
Hey, at least he's accurate.
Hey, yeah. You know, what's going on, everybody? It's good to be back on such a slow week.
He of the News Nerds Need Twitter account, where you can follow along and get up-to-date news on all geek culture. I think that's pretty accurate to say, right?
Sure.
And later tonight, Agent underscore 70 will be joining us. But we want to remind everyone.
Oh, wait.
You're about like me when I had to take over controlling the sound effects. You're like, surely this sound effect, this icon represents this sound effect. Nope.
Right.
Well, what about this one? Nope. But anyway, make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, which I finally updated.
What?
Go look at it.
You changed those photos? Those,
yes.
It's not the hangover anymore?
Nope. No more hangover. No more LA Noir. We have up-to-date images for things that are actually relevant.
Wow.
I feel like I have a whole new website now.
You gotta love it.
Next step is to actually work on the comicbookchronicles.com website that I have the domain for. Baby steps.
Sure. Maybe that the Twitter account too.
Just link the URL to your Stitcher radio page.
Yeah, I guess I need to at least do some link forward in for the time being until I have some time to work on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, get some more. That's another thing I need to do. I need to update the Stitcher feed because I'm behind a couple episodes. But you don't want to hear about my procrastination. Just make sure to go to theclicknation.com where you can view previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at theclicknation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your circles on Google Plus. Just search for The Click Nation to like the page and join the community, which I realize I need to update that more often. There needs to be a nice service. I know Dirt uses stuff that auto forward stuff to Google Plus. I don't want to post from Google Plus and send it to other stuff. I want to send from other stuff to Google Plus.
I don't know of any way that does that. Post it on Google Plus and it sends it to Twitter and it sends it out to Facebook and LinkedIn and
There was one a while back. I would have to find it, but I'm not sure if it's even usable anymore though.
Yeah. But that's all stuff
Google,
I intend
Google
on
Google is
at.
Like always tweaking and changing what they do, so it's easier to start with Google.
Right.
And send it out to the other places than to try to go to the other places and send it into Google.
Yeah, maybe that's something to look at in the future. But subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/theclicknation, and also subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Remember, we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, except for the Thursday night that Guardians of the Galaxy comes out. We won't be starting at 9, but whenever it ends, I'll probably be doing a recap show for anyone that wants to hop on around probably 10 o'clock-ish.
Hey, wait, when is that next week or?
2 more weeks, I think.
2 weeks, okay. Oh, great.
It just popped in my mind just now. But yes, join us live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure to use the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles on your favorite social media accounts. Try to read your stuff during the show. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. So before the show, Dirt was mentioning how he hasn't had time to check his email.
I'm just mugging for the camera while you're talking. Go ahead.
I thought you were mimicking me. No. So I had brought up how I've been keeping up with a lot of news, and boy, has there been a lot of news, at least from
the last 2 days.
Yeah, last 2 days. But, of course, I'll start in chronological order from stuff that at least started coming out from last Friday onward. So first, Valiant announced that they have Jeff Lemire teaming up with Matt Kent and Paulo Rivera to do sort of a standalone series called The Valiant, which I think takes like the Eternal Warrior and Bloodshot and probably some other characters and tells like a standalone story. So that's something to look forward to. Marvel's
what is it? Wait, I don't know. Is it about characters called The Valiant?
Let me actually open the link that I've got here instead of trying to go off memory.
For shame.
For shame, especially since that news came out like almost a week ago today. So this December, Jeff Lemire joins the Valiant universe for a 4-issue miniseries of epic proportions. Joining Matt Kent and Daredevil artist Paulo Rivera, Lemire will bring together the Eternal Warrior, Bloodshot, and the new Geomancer Kay McHenry to combat an ancient universe-threatening evil, the Immortal Enemy. Although The Valiant only spans 4 issues, it promises to have massive fallout on the universe as a whole and affect the direction through 2015. Yeah.
So it's like The Avengers.
It's like Unity, yeah, in a way.
Or The Ultimates.
Yeah. Even though I thought it was like going to be sort of a standalone story, but I guess it will have effects on the entire line. Let's see. Marvel expands Death of Wolverine event with the Logan Legacy limited series. So, of course, everyone knows Marvel is going to kill Wolverine in the fall. So there's going to be lots of tie-in issues and so forth. Oh, and Dirt's made sure to bring up the website so you can follow along.
Yeah, well, I got to read it too. So I just figure everyone else can read it along with me.
Those watching on the video. So I'm going to go off memory because I don't feel like clicking the link. It's going to be, is it 7-issue limited series with?
Yes, beginning of October.
With Charles Soule writing the beginning and bookend parts. And Mike Marks, former editor on the Batman books, has recruited a whole bunch of Batman-related writers to write the following 5 issues. Writers such as Ray Fotz, Kyle Higgins, Margaret Bennett, James Tynion IV. Did I miss anyone?
The books are X-23 by Tim Seeley, Sabretooth by Kyle Higgins, Lady Deathstrike by Marguerite Bennett, Dokken by Ray Fox, and Mystique by James Tynion IV.
Okay. So, like you said, each issue dealing with a different person that has a direct link to Wolverine in some capacity. So, we'll see how that goes. I'm going to skip the Young Justice news because no one cares about that but me.
I'm all right with it.
So basically, on July 27th, Justice League fans need to pay attention to something. So that's going to be during the weekend of Comic-Con, I believe. Some people are speculating it's just going to be an announcement regarding maybe like both seasons being on Blu-ray or being released on DVD.
Probably.
And not an actual third season.
One thing that people are speculating is the season ended on a cliffhanger, so it is possible that on the next like big animated movie that comes out from Warner Brothers, sometimes they throw on like 10, 15 minute shorts at the end with different random characters. They may do like a 10, 15 minute Young Justice kind of wrap up, kind of showing how the cliffhanger is resolved and how the characters kind of go on their way. But it's just a rumor. You never know.
I'd be all for it.
I mean, could be a movie, could be another video game, which I don't think they will make this big announcement for just another video game. Or for, I should say for this one anyway.
Next up we have Red Circle Comics is now Dark Circle Comics. Is anyone familiar with Red Circle Comics?
Yeah, so Red Circle is basically an Archie imprint. They're just basically the superhero universe, if I'm not mistaken.
DC actually bought the rights to them in the mid-90s, I think it was, maybe the early 90s, and did it as the Impact Universe with the Fly and the Ray and the Shield and all those guys.
Or somebody, yeah.
Yeah.
So they just changed the names, not sure. I didn't really read all the way through it, but
it's a fresh start and a new direction for these iconic characters. It all boils down to story tales that feature compelling characters. Okay, blah, 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 blah. it will feature a more cinematic, literary, and mature approach to the characters. Okay, so it's another Archie is going for older readers and abandoning kids and families again.
They don't buy books anyway. Rabble, rabble, rabble.
And they're following... Yeah, they started with Afterlife with Archie. They're going to be doing a mature Sabrina, the Teenage Witch.
Uh-oh. Sabrina going to be showing some thigh meat.
Yes. they'll be more akin to cable television shows like Boardwalk Empire, True Detective, and Orange is the New Black. What? This is the worst idea ever.
Orange is the New Black comic book?
This is the dumbest. Like, Archie has had so many problems over the last couple of years. They brought in, like, a new publisher, CEO, John Goldwater, who was, like, the grandson of the guy who founded the company. And his whole thing is that he basically hates everything that his grandpa did. And he wants to just... destroy the kids market, and they want to be all they want to be mature and grown up, and it's like Archie spent 50 years cultivating this idea that they're, you know, family safe, youth oriented, all American, you know, happy comics that are good for the whole family, and he just came in and he just totally trashes it, and he just wants everything to be mature and grown up, and he wants lesbians, and he wants people making out, and he wants to tease people being topless in Afterlife with Archie, and like all of this stuff, and just and abandon everything that they spent 50 years building.
No wait, the regular Archie's universe is still there now. This is just an
That's well, but I mean, this follows the trend of everything they've been doing over the last few years.
Right.
Since he came over.
I got you.
They had a female, I don't know if she was like chief financial officer or if she was the co-CEO at the time or whatever, and they ran her out of the company so they could do some of the stuff that they wanted to do. But I don't know. It's just... I just don't understand what that company's doing, but whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Moving on. This
classic, is more important news. Classic Materia on Twitter is using the Comic Book Chronicles hashtag. First he says, yes, finally Dead Logan. He says, Aquaman, Throne of Atlantis animated is great news. Looking forward to that. And, oh, nice. I love the Impact Universe. Still have copies of The Fly and Jaguar.
Well, that he's gonna hate this universe because it's gonna be nothing like
that. Like that. He can add Orange's New Black to his catalog.
Well, I don't think they're gonna do that actually. Well, I don't know. They may actually do that.
All right. Anyway.
Yeah.
Next up we have Legion of Superheroes returns in the Justice League United annual, which comes out in October. I would have guessed you were a fan of the Legion dirt.
I was a fan of the original Legion. That was another thing where they spent like 30 years building the Legion, and then in the 90s they rebooted the whole thing. So I quit when they rebooted. And then when they did the New 52, I was like, well, they're going to reboot it again. They're rebooting everything in the DC universe. I'll give it a shot. And of course, they didn't reboot the Legion with the New 52. They just kept on doing the old story. So it was the worst jumping on point for anyone to pick up Legion. And of course, it had terrible sales. So they canceled it. And the rumor was that in the New 52, the Legion of Superheroes are somehow the Legion of Earth 2. So now this will be the Legion of Earth 1.
Oh. Well, DC decided not to reboot Batman and Green Lantern, and that worked for them. Could have worked for
Legion. Okay, but the different – well, those were kind of a – I guess you could call it a soft reset.
Right.
Where some of the stuff from the past still counted, but not everything, and they had the ability to – you know, kind of condense certain stuff down and kind of gloss over it. But some of the stuff did get cut out of continuity. Whereas with the Legion of Superheroes, it was as if nothing had changed. It was like there's a bright flash of light. They lost contact with the Legionnaires who were in the modern era, and they couldn't travel through time anymore. So they were just stuck in the future. And then that was it. Everything else just continued on exactly as it had been. So, anyway, if this is a fresh start and is coming in on the ground floor, then I may give it another shot. But if this is somehow going to tie into the to the reboots they've done in the past, then I'm not interested.
Okay. Next up, we have DC Comics also announced another Green Lantern event because can't get enough of those. So we have Green Lantern New God event called Godhead, which has the Green Lantern, well, actually all the ring bearers fighting against New Gods and having something to do with the Source Wall.
Okay.
You're still reading Green Lantern books, right?
Yes and no. I read the main Green Lantern and Red Lanterns, and then if any of the others cross over, I may read the crossover, but I don't read New Guardians or Core or any of those.
I was reading Green Lantern, Green Lantern Core, and Red Lanterns, and now I just read Red Lantern. I don't care about the Durlin War or whatever, and it's just something it had to go. I'm probably gonna try and see what this Godhead stuff is about. I am trying to read Sinestro too. I forgot about that book, but I might ditch that too.
I'm interested just because I always like the Jack Kirby Fourth World stuff, and since they're redoing it, I'm just interested to see how it plays out. But with what happened with Infinity Man and the Forever People, and how bad that has gone, and there are only two issues in, and I'm already ready to let it go. I'm just kind of worried about how it's all going to play out. But, I mean, you never know. They might be able to you get different writers in there, and someone can make it interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I have no background with the New Gods except the little bit I've seen on the cartoon shows. And even then, I don't really pay that much attention to them. All I know is Darkseid, and Apocalypse.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Although one thing, this is something we talked about a while ago, and I'll bring it up. We mentioned the fact that people still read Larfleeze, the Orange Lantern book. And I actually looked through our subscribers at the store, and we have more people subscribing to Larfleeze every month than subscribe to Secret Avengers and Mighty Avengers.
Wow.
Yeah, think about that.
That actually, I guess, can lead into the next news, which is the October 2014 solicits. And I did notice that there were no mention of Mighty Avengers in the October solicits. Oh. They haven't actually announced any a cancellation for it, so there's that.
They did for Hawkeye, though.
And Thunderbolts.
And Thunderbolts. Yeah, who cares about that one?
Hey. Hush your mouth.
I'm just saying.
It's actually been good. Even I haven't read this week's issue, but even Charles Soule's run was good, and at least the first issue of Ben and Blacker, or Acker and Blacker, whatever their names are, was kind of entertaining. But
yeah, I've heard that.
So basically, a lot of stuff had already been leaked. Like DC has a whole bunch of new books, like Lobo and Clarion, the Witch Boy, and Deathstroke. I'm sure I'm forgetting one coming out. Marvel had the Logan's Legacy and a couple of other tie-in issues or tie-in miniseries. One from Dennis Hopeless. Kind of go off the top of my head. What else was in the Marvel solicits? That's about it, I guess. But of course, everything stuff to look forward to, and people trying to glean whatever they can from the solicits. Clues are being leaked, and finally, I guess the. Well, actually, no, not the.
Not finally.
Yeah, I had to scroll down.
You guys supposed to, you know, get to that.
Actually, all three of these can be. Well, actually, before I get into that, I guess it was Entertainment Weekly released a cover for cover promoting Marvel's Avengers Age of Ultron movie that comes out next year. So it had Iron Man, Captain America, and Ultron featured on in front and center with a bunch of Ultron soldiers flying around in the background. And inside the issue, I think they released 8 images from the movie. So you see like Cap and Thor, and you see the Avengers hanging out in Avengers Tower with Rhodey, who apparently is going to be in the movie.
Do they eat shawarma?
We'll have to wait and see. And they also give like tidbits for the movie, so I don't know if I should share if people want to be surprised. I guess I'll leave you to go read that if you feel like it. But
I just think it's interesting looking at this cover is that they made sure that Captain America is not wearing his helmet and that Iron Man is not wearing his mask. That way you can see the actors' faces, because that's the big – it's not that it's Captain America and Iron Man. It's that these two hot actors in Hollywood returning for this movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, you know, they – I mean, it's just like the Avengers 1 poster. It was the same way they had their mask off.
I mean, yeah.
First door.
Yeah, that's kind of like just any movie, superhero movies. I was like, oh, the actors have to get FaceTime, and I'm pretty sure some of them have been like, yeah, you don't have to do this, but they do it anyway, kind of deal.
I don't know. It might be the opposite. There might be some of these guys going, if I don't get at least 2/3 with my face showing, I'm not doing it.
Oh, no, there's totally some of that. I mean, yeah, that is definitely true. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's, like I said, at least a couple of them that's probably like that. You know, I don't – but that's definitely true.
I went to invite one person, and we got 2 additions to the show. Got a man, Agent 70, with us, and Classic Materia.
Blackton America is back, baby. What's up, guys?
Nice orange hue you got going there.
I think it's the lighting in here. I'm going to turn this one off.
I think he's in a sauna.
Yeah, well, that doesn't help any, but I'm glad to be back, guys. You guys are kicking ass, and I love it. And I had to be back just for this momentous occasion of everyone going apeshit over comics that they don't read.
Yes, sir.
Round of applause for that, please.
Yeah, where's the hit his music? Plus, I want to quickly thank you for doing a lot of promotion for the show tonight on social media.
Man, that's the least I could do. You guys are kicking ass and taking names. So, you know, it's like I said, it's the least I could do. You guys are forever my boys, and I love that you're still keeping this strong. Roddy, what's going on, buddy?
It's all good. Classic, how you doing, sir?
Okay, okay. Like I said, that's your chair over there, man. Don't worry about me. I'm busy.
Man. See, we don't have to keep going on with this, man. Look, so you found a member. It's your spot, too. So.
Make sure to follow Classic on Twitter, at Classic Materia. No L at the end.
And he's over there getting bathed in the orange light so he can get his Superman powers up.
There you go. There you go. I want to talk about Zombie Archie, Woman Thor, and Black Captain America, or Blackton America, as I'm calling him.
Well, what do you want to say about Zombie Archie? We've talked about that already, right?
We talked about Zombie Archie. I don't think you guys brought up Dead Archie.
Yeah.
Or the Death of Archie.
Go ahead and hit us with that.
So the Death of Archie has hit comics, or it's hitting comics, and this is basically the and this is where I kind of got confused. But this is the same Archie universe where he had to choose between Betty and Veronica, or Life with Archie, or Life After
Life with Archie. Yeah, Life with Archie. Yeah.
So that comic has been basically doing a dual storyline where one storyline is Archie chose Betty and the other is Archie chose Veronica. And in this one, he's defending a senator who's, you know, from Riverdale, who is actually being fired upon by someone. He happens to be gay. And so this guy is being almost attacked by a gunman that obviously doesn't like gays. And so Archie takes a stand and basically takes the bullet. This was released in the news. I don't know if this comic is out in stores yet maybe just came out today.
It just the first, I think it's a two-parter, so the first one just came out today.
All right. And this is pretty bold for Archie Comics to do this, although, you know, it was kind of, I kind of met it with like, well, this is older version Archie. This isn't like, you know, the 616 Archie, but I don't even know because I don't follow Archie that well.
Yeah, this is the ultimate Archie.
Ultimate Archie. So this is kind of like when ultimate Peter Parker died. You know, that's kind of how I see it. But still all the same, it's pretty big news for comics and for, you know, for someone as iconic as Archie, because a lot of people grew up with him. You know, they've seen him in the, you know, Double Digest and Jughead and all that stuff growing up. And for them to sort of tie it to this big social issue. And they keep saying in the press that this is not a publicity stunt. This is not going to be something where Archie comes back to life years later. Although technically, he still lives on in this zombie Archie that they've got in that Dark Circle comics that you announced earlier. So well, I don't know. I mean,
this is an alternate universe to begin with.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they kill him off and they say, well, you know, this is not some storyline to bring him back. Mm-hmm. Well, but he's not really gone because this isn't really the reality of the universe to begin with.
Right. Well, I've got two questions about this. Is Life with Archie going to continue after this? And if not, or if so, you know, what does this mean for 616 Archie? Or like, can you still get the Double Digest with him and Jughead, you know, goofing and playing pranks on Mr. Weatherby?
None of that gets changed. I think Life with Archie is going away.
Okay.
I believe.
I don't know. I'm waiting for them to announce that he's being replaced by female Archie or Mexican Archie or
Black Archie. West Indian Archie.
Or Kevin Kelly, even though he already has his own book, you know. Who
Everyone's looking to replace the linchpins.
Jughead's gonna take off his crown, dye his hair red, he's gonna be the new Archie.
Yeah, he's going to be emo Jughead. Kind of like the Dazzler went through that change.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's all I got to say on that, really, you know. All those weeks away, and this is what I come back with, right?
There we go.
Next up, we have... Let's get into the big news, which was...
You want to give us a for that? Well, never mind.
Marvel deciding to announce breaking news on different television programs. First, we had the View announcement of Marvel replacing Thor with a female Mjolnir welder.
Mjolnir. And with that, that's when I joined the show.
I didn't even introduce Age of 70.
It's all right. I came in on the stealth.
I said we had Agent 70 and Classic joining us.
Oh, well, yeah, you did. Okay.
And then the next night we had Joe Quesada going on the Colbert Report to announce that Sam Wilson, a.k.a. Falcon, would be taking the shield and becoming Captain America from a super serum-less Steve Rogers.
Yeah, that was what I was going to wonder about.
And then after that, for some reason, this didn't get a television announcement, just a little snippet on a website. But Iron Man, which had gone on hiatus and solicits, is coming back as the Superior Iron Man. And he gets a Apple-looking new suit, and he moves to San Francisco. And he has an app for Extremis. Everyone get Extremis. You get Extremis. You get Extremis. And why? How come every time Iron Man launches with the new number one, they have to go back to Extremis as the opening arc?
Because it's in the movie.
They can't do Demon in a bottle because that would just be, you know. Although they technically they should at some point.
Well, they've touched on, right. They've touched on like some of the elements.
If they were to do Iron Man Relapse number one, I would buy like five copies.
But then he relapsed during
Fear Itself.
Fear Itself, yeah.
He did, and Disassemble too, although technically that was a Scarlet Witch induced relapse where she, like, I guess made him drunk with her hex powers.
With power.
Yeah. But, you know, basically it cost him his, defense secretary job.
So what are our initial thoughts on these? Oh, yeah, and along with those three announcements, we have a new initiative, a new now, Avengers Now.
Really now.
I posted a link
now,
giving my quick thoughts on theclicknation.com about that you can read. And as you see on Dirt's image there's a promo image, as they always do with every Now initiative, of various characters to keep an eye on in the coming year. And Winter Soldier always finds himself on them, which is with no book, except now finally getting a book.
So it's Medusa, Winter Soldier, Angela, Scarlet Witch, Thor, the new Thor, Iron Man, Falcon, Captain America, Doctor Strange, Ant-Man, Deathlok, and some glowing red
guy. Inferno
from the Inhumans.
Right.
Yeah.
So we have two Inhumans to watch out for in the coming year. And you also notice that there's no, to play that card again, there's no Fantastic Four X-Men characters on there. Marvel don't love them.
Wolverine's dead, so he can't part-time on the Avengers like he's been doing for all these years, thank God. And I don't know, I guess Beast is strictly staying X-Men, considering all the things that have been going on with S.H.I.E.L.D. and their controversy with the X-Men. So I don't think he has, and plus he's too busy like screwing up the time stream, bringing back old X-Men. So pretty preoccupied at this point. But I think the surprising thing, or not so surprising, is Doctor Strange is there, and I wish he would pick a team and stick with it, because Doctor Strange has been whoring himself out to every team possible. He's in New Avengers, he's in the Illuminati, he's in Defenders. I hope he just like stays put somewhere.
I don't know. He hasn't been on the Invaders yet.
Champions isn't back yet.
Yeah. Why not?
They can't use the champion's name, I saw.
Oh, really? And you guys are, you know, in tune with what's going on in the books. What the hell happened to Brother Voodoo? Because wasn't he the sorcerer?
They killed him.
Yeah, they killed him.
Ah, well.
And
so much for progress.
I was about to say, let's pour some out for Brother Voodoo.
Yeah. Really. Let's have a drink of that.
The one thing that I'm actually enjoying about this image is that Angela and Thor are both on here, because I was afraid they were going to go, oh, well, Angela's now Thor's sister, let's just make her Thor. No, right. Which to me felt like a terrible shoehorning of the character. But since these apparently are going to be two different distinct characters, then now I am curious about who the new Thor is.
That was my first reaction, too, was, oh, my gosh, this is Angela. You know, this is a new character.
I would have been okay with that.
I would have, too. You know, but they hyped it as a brand new character, which leads me to believe that they're going to write a story where he does come upon a new character, similar to what they did with Lionheart when she was imbued with the Cat and Britain powers in that one story.
Right.
It was a brand new character. Right. Although I could see, and again, guys, help me out here. I could see Valkyrie taking that position because technically she is, you know, in that, you know, Asgardian line, and she, you know, has proven herself worthy.
Right.
And she has a another host soul in her body. For those that read Fearless Defenders.
That's right. Yep. All one.
But it can't be. This is a new character.
You know who I think it is? They said it's someone that, you know, they said they teased that it, you know, Thor has a lot of women in his life, and it could be one of her, and they're going to play the whole mystery of who is it, I guess. But my thought is it's going to be Jane Foster.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
Who has just popped back up in the series, but she has, like, cancer or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she has, like, her head covered up, so she doesn't have her hair. What if she picks up the hammer also and gold locks flow from her head?
It should be Lady Sif. I mean, if we're really even talking about who's worthy to wield Mjolnir, and you know,
hey, I mean, be okay with that.
Yeah, because she basically headlined Journey into Mystery until it was basically canceled, and you know, she's a proven warrior, Asgardian. You know, it's like why look somewhere else? But Odin seems pretty finicky. He's kind of a dick, so he'll choose anybody at random because that's what Odin does. You know, he's like, well, you know, and Thor is still existent. I think that's something to be clear for people that are like, well, they're killing Thor. They're turning him into a chick. No, they're not. This is a brand new character. Thor is going to be wielding that axe Yarnbjorn, and like, just he'll be like the artist formerly known as Thor. You know, just running around chopping heads off.
It's a Beta Ray Bill situation again.
It is. It is. I was actually going to mention that a lot of this stuff is sort of not a rehash, but I think Jason Aaron had there's an interview with him on one of the bigger news sites that says this is his Beta Ray Bill story.
Ah, yeah, okay.
Which is fine.
Right, it works for me.
Every generation should experience different people playing the roles of their favorite characters.
Shout out to Thor Frog.
That's right. Listen, I've got those issues signed by Simonson. Those are awesome. Those are some great, great stories.
I can't remember now.
Yeah, and there's been other people within the hammer. There was a fairly recently Black Widow had it in a What If story, in a What If One of Age of Ultron story.
So all those What If stories end up with people getting killed. Someone actually asked that on Brevoort's Tumblr. It's kind of funny because that's all big. That's all What If stories are anyway. A chance to do a bunch of mass killings.
That's kind of true, but this one kind of paid off slightly different, which I realize I'm the only one who read that one. But
and along with the three new book announcements, they said that there's at least 10 other series in the works, so I'm sure we'll hear about those in at San Diego Comic-Con next weekend.
Well, then what's going to get the axe? What other titles are getting canceled and going away then?
Probably Mighty Avengers.
Okay.
Thunderbolts, Avengers Undercover,
Secret Avengers, or the Undercover one you're talking about with the kids.
Kids. Well, that was always supposed to be finite, if I'm not mistaken.
Huh. That's still one more off going away.
Right. That's true. But you know, at the end of the day, it's not a it's not an ongoing that's getting the axe.
Well, but it's everything they've done since Avengers Academy has been. It's only going to be a limited number of issues, and then it goes, like, you know, 20 issues, and it's, we're done with this story, and then they just relaunch it with a new title.
Right.
Yeah.
So the creative teams on Thor, on all three books, are Thor by Jason Aaron writing, and Russell Dauterman from Cyclops on art, which I'm super excited about. all new Captain America is Rick Remender writing and Stuart Immonen leaving. All new X-Men to come over to that. And finally, Superior Iron Man is Tom Taylor from Injustice fame and Earth 2 fame. And the artist, I can't pronounce his first name, Sinar. His last name is Sinar. Another DC artist.
I might actually try Iron Man.
Then. Yeah, the Iron Man, the premise actually sounds interesting to me, and the art's going to be good. So, and it's not Kieran Gillen.
I was going to say, it's not him, and it's a writer that I actually kind of like the other stuff he's done. So I may actually give this one a chance.
Yeah, and to me, that seems the most intriguing of the three. You know, I mean, the first two, they went to mainstream media to announce that. Superior Iron Man, they announced it on Mashable, which, you know, like Tim said earlier on Twitter, seems apropos. But at the same time, it's one of those deals where with Superior Iron Man, similar to Superior Spider-Man, you're looking at someone that's a genius that's being corrupted and, you know, kind of that effect on the Marvel Universe. And, you know, a few questions I have is, like, where's Arnold Stark in all this? You know, like, how does he play into all this? Because he was just recently discovered. Is he, like, on his side, or is he going to go against him? Right. And how does this affect his relationships with, you know, the Avengers? Because he's going to start being a real dick to everybody, but he's still Iron Man. And we actually see shades of this in what's going on with the Original Sin, where it's revealed in Original Sin 3.2 that Tony Stark was partly responsible for the gamma bomb that created the Hulk. I'm jumping ahead a little.
Okay. So, other news. Bendis and Buddies explains the industry, the book.
Actually, if I can jump in on that real quick, I've got a copy of this. Review copy came this week. This Bendis, Words for Pictures, The Art and Business of Writing Comics and Graphic Novels.
Nice.
And this is, let's see, according to this, it'll be coming out next week. Basically, interviews and insider tips from Mark Bagley, Ed Brubaker, Kelly Sue DeConnick, Matt Fraction, Claus Janssen, Sarah Pichelli, Walt Simonson, and Jill Thompson. And he basically breaks down the process of writing. You know, he's got some scripts in here, so you can see what it's like to write a script. He can show you breakdowns of pencils and how he might sketch something out and send it to the artist so they have an idea of what he's talking about. And then it goes all the way through, even going so far as to he talks about when you get a contract, like what the different terms in the contract means, how you need
a lawyer.
You need to fight for alternative media rights.
So if it goes get a lawyer. TV,
no, don't get a dirt bag. Do it yourself. I mean, it's one of those things where if you've been following the industry for, you know, several years, there's nothing in here that's really new that, you know, is you're not going to read anything and be like, oh, my gosh, that's amazing. But it does put it all together, and it's easily written so you can follow it. You know, there's nothing confusing about it. It's all nicely laid out. And he actually, in a couple spots, he does kind of get candid where he talks about how, you know, you're an artist. Even though you're a writer, you're still technically an artist. You have to be creative. You have to come up with stuff. But at the same time, you have to keep in mind that this is your job. Like, if something's not working out perfectly, you have a deadline. You have to get things done. You know, if someone's pushing you to get something done, you've really got to buckle down and get your work done, because this is what pays your bills. This is what puts your kids in school. This is what puts, you know, food on the table. So there's, you know, times when it's kind of breaking out from that, you know, like wonderland. It's like, oh, my gosh, this is my dream. I've always wanted to write comics. And he actually kind of says, okay, here's how – these are certain ways you can screw things up and end up getting fired, you know, which is – probably some information that a lot of people actively in the industry need to, you know, figure out.
If only someone had said that to Kevin Smith.
Nice.
There's also this, on a side note, I guess, I don't know, Gail Simone started a Tumblr called the Comic Book Survival Guide or Survival Kit that supposedly will have some of that type of information in. So go check
which
that out.
Which I start following.
Yeah, cool. I did too.
Okay. Powers TV cast Dina Pilgrim and two more people. Mondo to release Batman Animate Series music on limited edition vinyl.
That's kind of cool. All the hipsters out there are going to have the music to Batman the Animated Series on vinyl.
Mm-hmm. 2014 Harvey nominations were announced, led by Boom, Valiant, Marvel, and Image. And finally, True Blood actress cast as Karen Page in Daredevil Netflix show.
No way. I missed this. Is this today?
Yeah. It happened earlier.
The redhead Jessica. Chick from, yeah, from True Blood.
This lends to the mystery as to who the lovely Rosario Dawson is playing.
Right.
And I really hope that when they release the cast list that her role says Mary.
Who do you think she's playing?
Typhoid Mary.
If it's Mary, it's going to be Typhoid Mary, and that's one of the coolest Daredevil stories ever, man.
Yep. But would you be surprised? But would you be really surprised if they put her down as Elektra?
I would, because Elektra is supposed to be Greek, but Marvel has been known to bend race every now and then, and this would probably be no. Actually, let me backtrack. Other than Nick Fury, they don't really do the race-bending thing. That's mm-hmm. more so when they give it to other properties like, you know, with Universal or with
or Fox.
Fox, that's what it was, with Fantastic Four, and they're mm-hmm. continuing to do that. But, yeah, if it's Mary, and Rosario has been known, you know, with the Sin City movies, has been known to be kind of open to action, and she would be a great fit for it, I think it would be fantastic. And plus, I love Rosario Dawson, so I'll be there anyway.
Cool. They might introduce Echo, come to think of it.
That'd be
also
cool.
Also a good pick.
You know?
Uh-oh.
All right.
We quiet.
Sound from everybody? What happened?
Yeah, I thought something went down.
All the background noise just all of a sudden stopped.
I thought, you know, I was just like, wait a second, everything went down. That's funny. All righty. So I'm sorry to have missed the beginning and to have missed most of the news, but it seems like I caught all the good stuff, so that's cool.
Yeah. The joys are going in announcement order.
Awesome.
All right, so time to do some reviewing of books.
Yay!
Wow, where to start?
I've got a full list here, so feel free to choose something that I read.
Looking at your list. Let's start with Robin Rises Omega number 1.
Did you guys all read this?
Yep.
Nope.
Classic?
I skimmed it because I was just like, okay, is Robin coming back in this issue? No. Well, let's see what this is about. But,
well, listen, I was absolutely surprised at how much I enjoyed this issue because it was just kind of wacky. Mm-hmm. The Q-Bert art is definitely a plus. The very the first, what, 5 pages of recap was huge for me because it just kind of right. It caught me up. I was just like, oh, okay, so this is everything that happened. Now I understand. Now I remember.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say real quickly, talking about those recaps, that was one of the things I was looking for. Like, I had a couple criteria for whether or not I was going to enjoy this, and one of the things I wrote down is, could a new reader pick this up and read it?
Right.
And definitely they can. I mean, they covered everything.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, they even had that part from Death in the Family where they were all sitting at the table looking at mm-hmm. their faces, and that was about the last time I was really into Batman, or I think I was still on this show at that time, so it caught me up a great deal.
Sure.
Everything since then.
Well, listen, let me tell you, the one part that I was surprised that they included was the time travel bit. I was like, what? They put that in? Okay, now it's all, you know. Yeah, I'm like, wow, they put that in, you know. So, but in all seriousness, the fact that they immediately jump into Apocalypse stuff in this issue, you know, all of a sudden made the title make sense to me. You know, like throwing the word Omega in there. It's like, oh, okay, now I understand why. You know, I hadn't read any of the solicits. I hadn't read any of the previews regarding what was going to happen in this issue. So I was pleasantly surprised at how entertained I was, even though I was still kind of annoyed at this, you know, this Apocalypse, you know, this Darkseid minion, Godfrey.
Yeah.
He was pretty annoying.
But, although, you know, this issue was funny, too, because and this is where it caught my attention, because, like I said, I was trying to skim because I didn't want to read it. But like I started to slow down right near the end where, and, you know, I'm spoiling it for you guys. But Shazam, basically, yes. the Justice League shows up and Lex Luthor's there and Run the Wonder, like the whole the current incarnation of the team is there to help Batman out. And Batman's trying to get into a portal because they took, you know, Robin's body to Apocalypse. And he's trying to reach there, and Shazam thinks he's helping Batman. He's like, no, you know, I'm going to help you. I'm going to save you. And he, like, snags Batman and, like, kind of holds him back from going into this portal. Batman looks, turns around and, like, just slugs Shazam right in the jaw, just whack, you know, give him, like, a back punch.
He's actually just beating him. He's pounding on him.
He's beating the crap out of him. He's like, you know, you stopped me from getting after my son, you son of a bitch, you know, right. And Shazam's just looking like all dumbfounded because he's still Billy Batson, and I thought it was funny as shit.
That was a good scene. I like that. I think he actually uses a profanity, Billy Batson. He's like, I just saved Batman's ass twice in one day. I was like, what?
Oh, he makes an appearance.
He speaks as Billy Batson, but he's still Shazam or right. still Captain Marvel if you're old school.
Well, I'm just saying. Shazam, period, makes an appearance.
But yeah, he's part of the Justice League now.
Yeah, he's there. The whole Justice League shows up in the book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And Lex Luthor / Iron Man is there, too.
Yeah. Now... So it's a good read. If you're going to be in it for the long haul, you know, Agent 70 says, it's a good read. And yeah. I don't think it's like a bad title.
Right.
Like I said, I skimmed it. I'll go back because now I'm intrigued and interested as to how this is going to play out, you know, in terms of Robin. I like how DC does things, though. They don't bullshit and say, well, Robin might come back. We don't know. They're like, Robin's coming back. This is how it's going to happen.
Well, they said that Batman will have a Robin at the end of the series.
Yeah. So, you know, it could be him. Could be not. Some twist. It could be
Frank. Yeah.
Frank and Robin or Zombie Robin.
Oh, Lord, don't get me started on Frankenstein is in this book. Why is Frankenstein everywhere in these DC books now?
Well, that's kind of part of Batman's whole, like, you know, quest to bring back Robin. He went to the supernatural and now Frankenstein and the mystical. Basically, Batman had to do a lot of shit that he doesn't believe in to bring Robin back.
Right, but it's just still, you know, kind of funny to see him in this book. I'm like, really? He's still here? He's still around?
Yeah.
So, you know, but at the end of the day, this is, you know, it's definitely, there's definitely a clear path from where the Batman and Robin and the Batman and some of the other books that have dealt. I guess Batman and Robin really is really the, or Batman and blank. Is really the straight precursors to this series because, you know, like you said, that's the series that explored all the ways that Batman was looking to try to bring Robin back. So that jumps straight from those books into this book. You know, but as we were saying before, just to finish up, this is an easy book to pick up because it does give you a great, you know, it's a long recap, but it's all there. And, you know, it does leave you in an intriguing place, you know, wanting to see what happens next, and that's a great thing. So, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised by this book this week.
And another thing that intrigues me is they've made it clear that one of the big coming arcs for the next year with DC is going to have to do with Darkseid. And this is, you know, basically taking Batman and strapping him to a rocket and firing him straight at Darkseid. So this is obviously, you know, having something to do with growing closer to whatever this big event is that's coming, that's tying in with all of that stuff. So you can see that this feels like it's got another layer of importance on it, because you know that something's coming big, you know, in the Justice League books and the big whatever the crossover is for 2015 being a Darkseid book, that this is tying into that.
Yeah, and it's appropriate that Batman is the one that's tying into that, because they've got a history. Basically, Darkseid is the one that killed them, or, you know, quote unquote killed them.
Right, sent them on that trip through time.
Now, one thing that I found,
you got a score to set.
I was really surprised when I picked this book up, because it is a $4.99 book, and it is thick. Like, it's a lot thicker than, you know, normally what you get with a $4.99 book, but the paper on the inside is kind of cheap. It's like the old Vertigo paper, where it's got the very lightest chemical treatment to it possible. It's still rough in your hands. It doesn't have that slick, smooth finish, so they obviously cut some corners to try to, you know, bring the price down, you know, make it fit in that $4.99. They probably didn't want to bump it up another dollar, you know. So it is kind of surprising to me that they did that. It feels, you know, printed a little cheaper than the average book, but it's so much thicker that I think it makes up for that difference.
Okay.
And the artwork's beautiful. So even if you're just going to pick it up and flip through to look at the pictures, it's just beautiful artwork all the way through.
Anything from the Kubert family.
That's my plan. It's like, I will actually read to see what's going on. I did read the last Batman and book that led into this, just so I know a little bit of what was taking place. Cool. Let's go to Original Sin. Number 6, where we finally find out who shot the Watcher. Except, do we really?
Yeah, do we really?
More questions. Damn it, Nick Fury.
Yeah, seriously.
You know he was gone. He was going to be the one to draw this out. So
after a lot of hemming and hawing, Fury reveals to his assembled group of heroes, including Punisher, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, Emma Frost, Ant-Man, and Winter Soldier, that they all were selected with a purpose, and that so one of them could step up and replace him as the man on the wall.
You want me on that wall.
You know what?
You need me on that wall.
I was going to say, if he's been the man on the wall for so many years, he hasn't been doing such a great job. I mean, he hasn't stopped every single alien invasion. That's his job, right?
No, he's getting to the stuff, getting to the bigger stuff before it becomes a bigger issue.
So what happens, like, every time the Kree or Skull or somebody invades? He wasn't watching the wall when the Skulls took over.
He was. That's why he had all those secret, you know, bases and all that stuff.
Well, he did a terrible job. They still invaded.
Well, yeah, but you got to remember they only invaded for like a day. Like, the entire secret invasion was the course of like 14 hours or something like that. Like, it all, it may have been 7 issues and took you like 6 months to read the story, but it all took place in the span of like an afternoon.
He should have stopped the original Skull that took Elektra's place to begin everything.
I think there was only so much he could know. And, you know, given the scope of who he, you know, went after and murdered, it was more so he was going after, like, kind of big name invasions and, you know, kind of like Galactus level stuff, except obviously not Galactus because he's hit Earth a few times. It's kind of weird, and I think this kind of lends to, you know, maybe a future book from Marvel where they kind of retroactively look at some of the things that he threats that he stopped. You know, if they're going to do another limited series like that, like kind of like a Nick Fury flashback. But this is kind of a strange turn, because basically what this says is that Nick Fury that we've seen in so many issues over so many years have been all life model decoys, which is plausible because we've gotten used to the existence of the LMD. But at the same time, it's weird because, you know, you're basically being left with, okay, what's credible? Because there were times where Nick Fury was, you know, making decisions that you know, hinged on, you know, that the Marvel Universe hinged on. You know, I recall, like, Secret War. Was that Nick Fury? Was that an LMD? And, you know, how updated does he have his LMDs be when they go out there? You know, he's naming them different names and everything. Like, oh, Frank, I'm sorry you died, Frank. You know, that's kind of weird.
Well, wait a minute. I think in this book, in particularly, while he may have had the LMD, I think it even said that he hadn't been old for that terribly long.
Right.
That's a good point.
Right. He'd been basically aging at a very rapid rate only recently. Right. They didn't go into, you know, even though we all know, you know, what sort of happened with the last stores of the Infinity Formula. But basically, you know, he was always forced to take a regular dose of it in order to maintain, you know, the status quo for himself. And once, I guess they used it on Mockingbird, right. You know, and they ran out of whatever was left, or they weren't able to make more, or whatever it was. I guess at that point, that's when he started to, I guess, you know, live off of whatever reserve he had in his body. Now he's aging, and now he, you know, that's the impetus for the storyline. So they, you know, he brings these this varied group together to try to come up with his replacement, you know, to stand on the wall with Colonel Jessup. So,
I'm just glad that Marvel found a version of the Lazarus Pit that they can use with this Infinity Formula, which is a brand new formula to the universe that I've never heard of.
So there's two things I was kind of curious about with this one. One, where is I wonder, curious why Nick Fury Jr. wasn't the obvious replacement.
It's a good question.
And two, well, this is not even a question, but this was like, I feel like out of all that group, you know, it's probably going to be Punisher.
But they've already taken his place.
Yeah.
I thought it was supposed to be Winter Soldier.
Yeah, they announced that it's going to be Winter Soldier, and that's kind of his role going forward. Which it's kind of weird because they posted him on that Avengers Now, so is he going to be an Avenger as well as a Space Defender? But, you know, you can
kind of. They're just going to have more LMDs, man.
So are they going to be Winter Soldier LMDs or Nick Fury LMDs?
Possibly. We'll see where it goes, but that's what I foresee, is that there'll probably be a couple of LMDs left over to kind of, you know, to let him be in more places at once. So, you know, that's where I foresee that going. But, you know, still kind of weirded out by, you know, Midas's look, you know, how he's kind of like a freaky looking thing. Right. I still want to see how that plays out, where this character comes in. So, you know, what's very frustrating about this is that, yeah, it's already 6 of 8, but it still feels like we haven't gone anywhere in like 3 issues.
Well, the last few issues have been all reveals and not much action, which has kind of been, it's been a payoff for all the action from the first few issues.
True.
But at the same time, you want to see some more progression. You know, or at least some kind of resolution, which we'll get in the last 2 issues, but it just seems the pacing's a little off in terms of like, okay, well, now we're going to tell the whole story. The last one was basically Nick Fury recap. This is like, okay, what now? You know, the next 2 issues are probably going to be Nick Fury dies, quote unquote, and, you know, someone takes the mantle, you know, and right. If this is all original sin, it amounts to, I think it kind of cheapens a little bit, like, what the Watcher has to do with this and why he had to die. Because we still haven't heard or seen who is the guy that's responsible for the death of the Watcher.
Right, and why he had to, you know, and why the Watcher really had to get, you know, bite the bullet, quote unquote. So
maybe that was the next event.
I'm thinking the killer, I guess we're talking around who the shooter, I guess they reveal who it is, you know, it's not clear. But that person obviously killed the Watcher to get whatever secrets he had, knowing he's only a person that knew everything in the world. Which I guess is obvious, but still. Anyway.
I thought at one point it was the Hood, but, you know, he's showing up in another original Sin book, and it doesn't look like it's him.
No.
All right, let's see. Let me bring up Black Market number one from Boom Studios. This is a four-issue limited series from Frank Barbary and Victor Santos. And it sort of revolves around a world that gets superheroes, and of course they're saving the day and whatnot. And this company, I forget the name of the company, they want to harvest the blood or the DNA, they call it, the DNA from the superheroes. So they, this guy that works for a coroner goes around, his brother gets him in this scheme of going around kidnapping superheroes to harvest their DNA.
Is it good?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked the read Victor Santos, or saw his art on, I forget the other, he had a Dark Horse book that he did the art for, Furious, which was another limited series. And Frank Barbary's name keeps popping up in different places, so I've been trying to read some more of his stuff. And yeah, I could see this in your nice little four-issue series running through and seeing what happens when people try to take the DNA from heroes and what can possibly go wrong from it.
What could possibly go wrong?
So, just wanted to bring that up.
Well, it is only a four-issue series, so you don't have to get too terribly invested. It's not like you're buying into, you know, 36 issues of some random story.
Right. So, hope I can at least keep up with four issues.
Yeah, it's an interesting premise. It's very similar to the MGH with Marvel.
Yes, mutant growth hormone, yes.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's sort of them dipping their toe in the water, because this could turn into something where they can, like, do an offshoot series based on the people that had the DNA stolen, how that happened. You know, what happens with them.
Interesting. All right. Might be worth reading. Is it a good intro into the series, and does it make you want to pick up the second issue?
Yeah, I'm going to keep up with it. And it was an easy read, too. So, Barbary does a good job of sort of giving you the background on the main character. I think his name is Ray. Sort of his family situation and the troubles with that, and the black sheep brother that gets him caught up in everything.
Cool. All right.
Dirt, let's hear something.
Something.
Ultimate FF. Ah!
Yeah, actually, I'm so sad that the artwork on this book is so terrible, because the story has been awesome. You know, dealing with the whole idea of parallel universes and pocket dimensions and all of this kind of stuff. Joshua Hale Fialkov is the writer of this. He's been around the block a couple times, and he does just a remarkable job of making these characters just seem like people that you want to hang around with and you want to see what happens with them, despite the god-awful artwork that this book has. But the Future Foundation right now, you've got Falcon, you've got Invisible Woman, you've got Iron Man. Dr. Doom gets stuck with them in this pocket dimension, and they run into Captain Universe. Is that who it is?
With the Captain star?
Marvel. Oh, Captain Marvel. Their version of Captain Marvel.
Or Marvel, right? Yeah.
And basically what's happening is they're trying to get home. They're trying to figure out exactly where they are. And Tony Stark understands. And he's like, okay, we're caught in an area in between dimensions. There's our world that we know of. There's an alternate reality. And we're kind of stuck in this space in between. And Captain Marvel is the one who's got the power to take them home. But Captain Marvel is Rick Jones, who got these powers by mistake. And he's basically, you know, he's Rick Jones. He's like the hangout dude who doesn't know anything. And this, a good portion of this issue is basically Tony Stark trying to explain to him, like, what an alternate issue is. Like, imagine two pieces of paper and there's a little space in between. He's like, so we're flat? He's like, no, shut up, listen.
Lord. Oh, God.
fun dialogue going back and forth between them, and it's just – it's really a good time. Like I said, he just makes you care about the characters and make you, you know, want to see more of what's going on with them. And at the end of this, it's tying into some sort of greater, you know, universe bending event. Like there's something that it's leading up to besides, you know, we had this rift where Galactus from 616 came over to the Ultimate Universe, and that set off some sort of, you know, other chain reaction coming out of Age of Ultron and all of that. And in the final page of this book, this is a picture I tweeted out 2 weeks ago, is the final page of this is the Ultimate Spider Ham has somehow found his way into the Ultimate Universe. And so...
And it's Miles Morales of all people.
No, it's Miles Morales.
Oh!
Miles Morales from Ultimate Spider Ham.
And it's not like... You actually see the pig's head. Like, it's a real pig.
Yes, it looks like an anatomically correct pig's head on a human body. It is the best thing ever.
Now I'm going to have to read this week.
So this book stands for...
That's hysterical. I'm going to have to read this.
It should be called Ultimate WTF instead of Ultimate FF.
Nice.
What the fuck?
Nice.
But like I said, the artwork is just god-awful. Like, it looks like, you know, when you had that deluge of crappy comics in the 90s and you had guys drawing comics who were probably seniors in high school, you know, trying to get art class credit and making some sort of book, and it got published because there were 9 billion publishing companies trying to put out comics. The artwork looks like it came from one of those places. It's terrible. But... the story is so good. It's when I got done with the book and I was thinking back in my mind, I was remembering artwork from different artists as those characters. Like I had so shielded myself from how bad the art was. When I thought of Susan Storm, I was imagining the way she was drawn in the early issues of Ultimate FF and not how she looks in this book. You know, it's just one of those things where you just have to kind of mentally block how terrible that is out of your mind when you read it.
Yeah, they really messed up with some of the choices with these new Ultimate books minus Miles Morales.
Mm-hmm. That's because Miles Morales stayed consistent. They kept the same creative team.
Yeah. Okay. But like I said, the writing is great. If they had just found a better artist, they probably would have had a good series. But Fialkov is only on, I believe, one more issue. And then there's a number 6, and then this issue is over, or this series is over. So...
yeah. Is Miles Morales really carrying the Ultimate line right now?
Yeah, he has been for a while.
They can't seem to find the right hook besides Ultimate Spider-Man.
Well, they had Brian Wood doing the Ultimate X-Men books, and those were really good, you know, when he was in charge of those. But then everything kind of fell apart when they did the whole Galactus storyline, and that was an Age of Ultron thing. You know, that wasn't necessarily something that those guys wanted to do. It was just somebody up top said, oh, hey, now you got to deal with Galactus, do a big thing about that.
I like Fialkov on the Ultimates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel they dropped the ball, too, because Kitty Pryde was pretty much the savior of that whole Galactus thing, and they really didn't expand on that too much since then.
Well, they put her into, like, not semi-retirement, but they kind of benched her for a little while in the Ultimates.
Which is a damn waste.
Right, like she's taking a break from superheroing, so.
It's bad booking. It's Vince Russo booking on the Ultimate.
Oh, no!
Russo.
Where is it?
Let's hear about Teen Titans number 1 from DC.
What's that?
I'm sorry, what?
Teen Titans number 1 from DC. Let's hear what we thought of that.
I was pleasantly surprised. When I read this. Did it even make it to my list? Yes, I did. I just my gut reaction to this, it just was not a bad first issue. I'd be willing to read more of the adventures of this group, even though it's not my Teen Titans. I'm kind of curious to see I missed out on the new Teen Titans relaunch and the new 52. So I'm not sure what Raven's powers are right now. I'm not sure why she's got this white stuff all over her face. I'm not, you know, I really don't get a lot of that, but I'm willing to, you know, give this a shot because Beast Boy's still Beast Boy. And, you know, they've got some version of Robin on this. And, you know, it seemed like, you know, the art and story were working hand in hand in this issue. There was just a lot of good things about it.
I will not read a number two of this series.
Okay.
I did not care for this at all. You just had a group of terrorists that come out of nowhere and really mm-hmm. don't seem to have much of an agenda, and they don't have much of a history, and they're just kind of disposed of because they needed bad guys for a story element, but they're
right.
overly unimportant. And it just seemed like they had too many, well, now we need to use this character. They have right. this power, so we'll set up this situation so they can use that power. And now we've got this character we have to do something with. So we need a situation where we can use their power. And then you get to the end, and some guy is like, oh, yeah, we get rescued by the two who look like a couple of freaks. And before he can say freaks, what's his name? The purple guy.
The just Barricade, I think they named
yeah,
him.
Yeah, whatever. He just totally Bunker. Freaks out like a yeah, like Bunker. A total
Oh, Bunker?
Like a total dickhead.
Yeah, I didn't even – couldn't even get the guy's name right. I'm sorry.
By the way, he seemed like he was invented by someone that read a lot of comics in the 90s. He's got the,
yes.
the full ninja thing with the,
yes.
the string hanging behind him.
He was introduced during Scott Lobdell's run. So.
Oh, okay. Well,
and he's got like the piercing in the bottom of his face, and he's got that little hipster patch.
Yeah,
I didn't even notice. See, these are the things I didn't notice. You know, I just sort of I glossed over that stuff. I was just happy to see some incarnation of the Teen Titans.
And look, you know? To be fair, he just got saved by a green guy with Vulcan ears, and he's going to say, hey, that guy looks kind of like a freak. Which, hey, he's a green guy with Vulcan ears. He does look kind of like a freak. You know what I mean? It's like
he's Beast Boy. Of course he, you know.
Well, I know, but the guy freaks out and he's right. like, yeah, some of us wear masks and underneath we might be good, we might be evil, we might be black or white, we might be man or woman, we might be straight or gay, but the one thing you can count on is we are dangerous. It's like, shut the hell
and
up.
And forever teenage. Like, how many incarnations of Teen Titans are we going to have with Beast Boy in it? Is he ever going to grow up? Like, what's his aging process compared to, like...
Well, this is the new 52.
Right, this so is the yeah. Everyone's gone backwards in age.
And the other thing, the other question I have about this book is, are they going to actually follow a successful pattern, which they saw in Young Avengers over in Marvel, where they told a good story of young teenagers dealing with, you know, basically threats that are beyond just the typical superhero threats, like dealing with magic or whatever. I think if they go that direction, this book has some promise. Otherwise, this might die out because
I honestly don't see this book going very far. But I'm willing to pick up the second issue just because I thought that, you know, they created a halfway decent premise. I didn't think that the villains were as one and done as Dirt is portraying them to be. But, you know, I'd be willing to pick up a second issue. To be perfectly, perfectly honest, were I not reviewing it, I don't know if I would pick it up.
Yeah, if they go the Young Avengers route, which, you know, people had, you know, problems with that when Young Avengers came out, but
right.
it actually worked for them. You know, if they go that route and they bring in social media and modern type of a feel to it, mm-hmm. I think it might last. Otherwise, it's just going to go, you know, the way of the dodo because this is, what, the 12th or 13th iteration of Teen Titans?
Right.
I think there's going to be a different writer 6 issues in.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, I was enjoying Will Pfeiffer, at least on his little 3-issue stint he did on Red Hood and the Outlaws, which is interesting because that issue came out this week, and of course they said Scott Lobdell was taking it back over again. I see in, I think, the October solicits, they have Will Pfeiffer writing an issue again, so not sure what's going on there.
Well, that could also be a mistake in the solicits. That happens from time to time.
Oh, okay. That's a book that I feel like just go away.
What, Red Hood and the Outlaws?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even know what that's about. So,
like, what purpose does that serve?
Who cares?
It's got Starfire and bikinis. So that's what.
And it's got Arsenal. What's his name?
Speedy.
Speedy.
Speedy Arsenal. With a trucker hat.
Right, but Arsenal is in Justice League now.
No, he's not.
No? Oh, no, wait. He's in the Canada team.
No, that's Green Arrow.
Oh, that's Green Arrow? Okay.
Oh.
No, isn't he still with Red Hood and the Outlaws?
Yeah.
There you go.
But he's got a trucker hat and a tattoo. Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, they've been trying to figure out.
Oh, I know where I'm mistaking this. I know where I'm mistaking this. I'm thinking of New 52 Futures End number 11.
Yeah, I remember Old 52 or Old DC. He was embracing his like Native American heritage, which they should do that again, considering the controversy with Dan Snyder and the Redskins. That would actually be a good way to kind of weave that into current pop culture. Why am I not working at DC? Make mine Marvel is what
that's
I'm saying.
That's right.
Yeah.
My other problem going back to this issue specifically as I'm sitting here flipping through it is I really didn't care for the layouts of the artwork, like the way he did the panels, because there were so many times that he draws like this weird trapezoid on the side and another trapezoid overlapping it and then leaves all this just empty white space in the background. Or he's drawing characters standing around outside, so he just decides to draw like a little rectangle, and that's colored with the color of the ground. But otherwise, you know, he's not drawing in any backgrounds. He's not drawing in any detail. It's like he's doing these little tricks to, you know, keep from having to draw the detail that it needs. Yeah. And to me, it was just kind of like, okay, half of this page is white. You know, it's like he's not drawing half the page. He should have gotten half the payment for that page rate.
What's funny about that is I didn't, you know, like there's definitely pages and I'm starting to flip through it now because I don't recall that. The layout didn't bother me nearly as much, probably because of the way out, you know, like what I was reading it on. But I see the criticism that you have for the white space. There's definitely pages that do have it more so than others. I've never thought of Rocafort as someone that really skimped on backgrounds, but I think he was, you know, I definitely think there's more of like a glass shard type layout that he's going with in this issue.
Yeah.
He does work it with the onomatopoeia. You see, like, the foon and stuff for explosions, and it's pretty big, you know. So, I mean, there are certain panels, I guess you can call them splash panels, because they're not really splash pages. They're just, like, a good section of the page where you do get the effect. But I do see that kind of lead in with the white space and using that. That's kind of a McFarlane tactic where, you know, he would do that, you know.
That's true.
Artistical. It's not necessary here. It's kind of one of those things where maybe he patterned. You can see the 90s like influence on this guy's style. So,
definitely.
You know, I would probably give him a pass for that if this is what he's consistently doing. And given the cover, this is kind of where they're going. I mean, you know, I can't gripe too much on that, you know, because it does take you back to the 90s, which some of that artwork was cool. Hey, it's not like Rob Liefeld, you know?
That's true.
Oh, my God.
Well, he did draw Pete on a couple of these, so.
That's funny.
I don't know. To me, it just.
Everyone's arms are in proportions with their torso and shit and their heads, you know, so we don't have that shit going on.
It just felt like on a bunch of these pages, he goes, I don't really feel like drawing in the rest of this office building. I'm just going to put a rectangle up here by the guy's head and leave the rest of it blank.
All right. Well, like I said, I can see some of the criticism, and I think some of it is valid, but I don't think he's skimping on all. Listen, we've all seen issues where the artists have skimps on every background. So this isn't. I don't think this falls that, you know, that into that category.
Wrong. This is the worst thing I've ever heard.
You know, what he can benefit from is those computer artists that like kind of do the coloring and stuff. He could benefit from maybe some CG interference or some CG enhancement, if you will. You know, I mean, I don't think that would hurt this title at all.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Roddy Cat.
Ms. Marvel number 6.
Yes.
I enjoyed this issue a whole lot. So this is issues coming off of the heels of her saving her friend from this new villain that's in town, and now she's going to investigate the villain and also patrolling the town where she runs into
Jersey City. Sewer.
Yep. Where she runs into Wolverine.
Of course.
In the sewers of the town. Because, you know, he doesn't have enough issues to go through. So this is basically the issue where they team up and start to actually, well, they bond for one thing, and they start to investigate seemingly two different things that sound like it's going to intersect at one point. Like Wolverine's in town trying to find something using that gun.
Yeah, he's tracking down a student of the Jean Grey school.
Right, and Kamala's just looking for, trying to find the villain so she could put a stop to him. They meet up in the sewer. They there's some real nice interactions in between them. You know, Wolverine is actually not as gruff as he usually, you know, would be. Maybe he has softened up because he doesn't have his healing factor anymore. I don't know, but like it's some pretty good dialogue.
Well, this is Professor Wolverine, you know. Yeah. Now, right. So,
and not to sound creepy, but Wolverine seems to have a soft spot for little girls.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, I say that in the most honest way possible, but he seems to like, you know, young female proteges and bringing them along without being pervy.
Thank heaven for little girls.
So, I mean, I guess the one thing I can add to this is, you know, I agree there are some great lines in the book, you know, in the interaction. I have to say that some of the lines, though, would make an older reader feel pretty old, you know, because it is teenager. This is, you know, more so than Teen Titans that we just reviewed. This, you know, like the dialogue in this book, just, you know, wow. I'm like, that's how kids talk nowadays? Is that what they're really saying? Yikes.
Right. Thought you were talking about the draft stuff, but I see what you're saying now.
What's that? Who's that?
What? No, we're,
so in the story, this is a little bit. So when she first meets Wolverine, she basically has a fangasm and tells him like she's like number two, like number one in his fantasy superhero team up draft or something like that.
Oh yes, no, that's not what I was referring to. I was referring to some other stuff. It was, you know, made me feel old. Just a couple little things here and there.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. But
that's funny. All right, let's see, what can we throw out here?
We can do some rapid.
Oh wait. Did anyone else read Avengers World number 9?
Yeah, I did.
Yes.
That was a fun issue to read. It highlighted and spotlighted. This is what I, in my quickie summary, you know, so I could actually try to remember some of the things that I wanted to talk about. I called this Bill and Ted's Excellent Back to the Future Story with Sunspot and Cannonball. You know, that's
the bromance.
Exactly. That's pretty much what this issue was. You know, I was like, you know, we're waiting for the whatchamacallit, Doc Brown's time machine, right? Right. You know, the characters are basically held captive on AIM Island, you know, after a failed rescue attempt. And Maria Hill contacts them and, you know, asks them to go undercover. And what does going undercover entail? Like going into space and time and you know, and making all sorts of, I guess connections to the Secret Avengers book.
Right. So basically there's more time travel involved because, you know, you're not supposed to be doing that anymore, but they're going into the future to try to stop the source of AIM getting all of their tech on Madripoor.
Right. And there's a last page reveal. It's like, oh, wait, when did this work and happen? What?
Right.
Jocasta, I could do without, I could do without so much AIM, but definitely, it's my click of the week.
Nice.
Nice. All right.
Nice. I enjoyed this. It's one of my candidates, too.
You know. Been the best issue of Avengers World so far. and it helps to have Stefano Caselli's art on it, and one wrestling reference and one two Back to the Future references.
Yeah, really.
It's your kids, Marty.
I'm actually kind of enjoying the fact that this is basically solo Avengers or Avengers team up, but couched in an overarching story. I think I may have said it before, but I kind of like the way they're doing it.
I like it too. Like I know that we kind of poo-poo this book. I think the book that we really can poo-poo, as much as I don't like to say it, is Mighty Avengers. But I know. I hate to say it, but this book, you know, for the reasons that you just stated, is, you know, is a great way to spotlight some of the team members as opposed to the big three, you know, and the ones that tend to appear in the movies, you know. So that's what's cool about this book. I like this book. I don't plan to drop this book unless, you know, things, you know, really go south. But, you know, I really like the solo Avengers within an overarching story with a team structure still in place, because they started Avengers World with a team, and now they're, you know, they've broken it up to have these little adventures with like a couple of different characters per issue. So that's been fun.
And we learned some things about Thanos coming up in the future, perhaps.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, that was weird. Swerve. Yes, that was the wrestling. Now I remember that was the wrestling reference.
Yeah, it was like one big bar fight that hemmed from that was pretty cool, too. And then Jocasta comes in and all that other good stuff. I'm like, okay, how did this... That's the one thing I want to know. How did that part happen? Which I assume we're going to see at some point.
Which part?
The Thanos. I mean, assuming this is an actual history that will happen, Thanos becoming an Avenger.
That would be very interesting.
Some people are even saying, like, hey, maybe that new Avengers 8 months in the future cover teases at it.
Oh, imagine?
You're right. It looks like it's him standing with a cabal, but
could that be the new Avengers?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because Namor is standing with him.
That's true.
Flip flops from hero to villain a lot.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, about that guy.
All right.
By the way,
what else? Oh, go ahead.
I proved on Twitter earlier today that Aquaman can beat Namor in a Submariner on Submariner fight. Shout out to Cyber Soldier. He tried to say, though, oh, Namor, he's got wings on his feet, so he's faster. Namor can only, like, swim up to 65 miles an hour. Aquaman can swim up to 150 miles an hour for 4 hours straight. And he can control animals or marine life, whereas Namor can't. So
I always thought Namor could.
Yeah.
Wait, he has his horn where he can follow him.
Oh, that's right.
He can call him, and he has an influence over women, but, you know, chicks can't do nothing against sharks. I mean, let's be real here. I would say about this Avengers World issue, and the artist caught my eye, Stefano Caselli. I don't know if he's working on anything else, but he pretty well captured the essence of this book, you know, the friendship between the two and the goofiness. But he's a great artist. I like him, and the cover by Stegman is also a plus, too. So I would definitely want to pick this up again.
All right.
And going back to the Namor thing, he'll do himself with his own ego. So it's not even a fight.
Imperious Rex. People
sleep on Aquaman all the time, man.
Imperious Rex.
Okay. Anyone else want to mention something?
Yeah, I got one. Where was it? X-Men number 16.
I read this. I couldn't fit it on my list this week. I did read it.
Yeah, it was a decent read. I mean, it was basically, so they have there's this hero, a villain called the Feature, who comes for his son Shogo, and that plan doesn't go all without a hitch because of Storm's daughter from the future, I guess, basically tells the team what happened. So now they're going from there with the knowledge of what he's made end up doing. But what ended up happening was he ended up taking Jubilee instead of the kid to bargain with, you know, to get the kid back for whatever reason. We still really don't know fully. But he has Jubilee now. The team is mounting a rescue to go see her and basically mount an offensive. And this issue was basically them. There was a good bit of action in it because you had them separating a couple of teams and just coordinating an attack against them. You know, all the while the future is just like, all right, they're not going to trade you for the sun and this, you know, this and that and the other and villain rabble, as they say, I guess. But it was a pretty good issue. I think, is this the, this must be the next last one that Wood's going to be on or something because he's leaving the book soon.
What's that?
Is this the, like, the next to last one that Wood's doing?
I'm not sure.
I guess whenever this storyline with the future ends,
right,
will be his last book.
We'll leave in a book, okay.
Right, I enjoyed, you know, like, I enjoyed the story. You know, it at least was, it seemed like it was moving forward. At least gave the illusion that it was moving forward. Yes. Because there was action and there was a development in, you know, I guess this, this information that Chimera, you know, Storm's daughter is kind of passing along and what, you know, what the true nature of Shogo is going to be. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the students of the Jean Grey School kind of coming to, you know, becoming more of a factor, exactly, more of a factor in combat, you know, for the X-Men. That was a nice touch too. So,
right,
you know, I enjoyed the issue. It's still, you know, it's a hard issue for a new reader pick up because you're jumping right into the middle of a longer story. But I enjoyed it for, you know, for what it was.
Yeah. Plus, it was great to see, you know, take charge Storm.
Oh yeah.
Her role as a team lead.
Definitely, definitely. So, all right, are we in rapid fire mode?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you do Uncanny X-Men number 23?
I reviewed it on comic book. On theclicknation.com.
All right, well, rapid fire, you know, just rapid fire in terms of the last will and testament, we don't really get into it. All we find out is that they need to have someone, hint, hint, wink, wink, from the other X-Men school, from the Xavier school, present for the reading of the will. And that's pretty much, I mean, to me, that's pretty much the point of the story. One of the subplots is how Dazzler is going to be dealing with her, being rescued from captivity at the hands of a Mystique. So, I guess we'll see her, I don't know about going goth, but definitely going more, more dark from what we normally know her to be.
Yeah, hopefully something actually happens in the next issue.
Yeah.
But besides us seeing Dazzler's new look, which is on the cover.
Yeah. Other thing, too, is this New Mutant Matthew, who kind of started to manifest powers after a Skrull attack, you know, kind of seeing how does he play into all this? You know, is he going to be a threat that they have to address as a team? Or does he play into actually being a beneficiary of the will somehow, or, you know, what's his deal? Because they do introduce him in this book.
Right, right, right. Okay. All right. Rapid fire. Let's see what else we can
tell us about Harley Quinn invades Comic-Con number one, Roddy.
Yes.
So basically the name tells you everything that the book is about. This the book is kind of set up like, almost like Harley Quinn Zero, whereas there's a story going on and then she's kind of floating through the story. It's a pretty fun read as Harley Quinn been pretty much. She and the rest of her crew ends up going to Comic-Con because I guess they're doing shows there, whatever sideshow thing she's associated with in her book. Harley just goes around causing mass trouble as she is wont to do. And there's a lot of great art in there, as well as just being a fun read. So I'm not sure if this is a one-off or they're going to do something else, because I really just kind of skimmed through it, to be honest.
One of those where they have, like, a different artist, like, every page?
Every few pages, yeah, a couple of pages, then there's another
one. Yeah, if you look at the cover, look at the list of, you know, I mean, they don't even list them. They say some of the greatest artists of all time. Yeah, that means it's a jam session.
No.
So it's cool for what it is.
All right. I see, Roddy, you also read She-Hulk number 6?
I did read She-Hulk number 6. The art in this one is not, it still kind of bothered me a little bit, but I've gotten used to it.
It's not as harsh as the previous issue.
You say the exact same thing.
Right. Not as harsh as the previous issue, so it's a little easier on the eyes. What's funny, I think I wrote in my notes that it wasn't as hard on the eyes, and it actually made me go back and force my way to read through issue number 5 to catch up on what happened. But what was disappointing about this issue is that, you know, it was I want to say anticlimactic, but it's like, all right, now we get to this point, and then it's something happened, and you have to figure out what happened, and then
you can see the exact point when that actually happens.
Exactly. And then all of a sudden we pivot and turn into another story. So
like, everything's just whatever it is, which apparently they're going to come back to at some point, I would imagine, because you can't just leave that like that.
Right.
And I would assume there is some, because I think even one of the panels kind of teases this, was like, well, there's something else definitely going on. Or two of the panels kind of say, well, there's clearly something else going on here, but.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it was very jarring, and it's kind of it's a tough way to read a comic, to be perfectly honest, like to see it and to read it happen, you know, to read it happen and just see the pivot and the swerve in the story just go from, like, you know, we suspect what's happening, but it's still very jarring to just sign on, you know, to have the characters kind of cut everything off
part of the story. Hey, exactly. Everything's cool now. Yeah.
Exactly. Did anyone read Silver Surfer number 4?
Totally did not know this was coming out. This was out.
So this is one of my potential clicks of the week. I enjoyed this. The story is the Silver Surfer bringing Dawn Greenwood back from her kidnapping, which was the impetus for the first 3 issues. And on the road back to Earth, they run into the Guardians of the Galaxy, because of course they have a movie coming out soon, right? But because it's a space, you know, it's space-based, you know, it's understandable, so it makes sense that they would make an appearance. But we get to revealing, or at least hinting at, some of the things that might not be quite right about Dawn Greenwood and the part of Maine that she's from. And I hate to say this, because, you know, you've heard me talk about how much I'm starting to get frustrated with this. There's an element of time travel in this book. It's very, very frustrating.
Hey, it wouldn't be a Marvel book without time travel.
I know. It's so very frustrating right now to be reading these books and to just be bombarded with more and more time travel. So there is an element of time travel in this book. For readers who are a little bit more, let's just say, of a certain vintage, they'll remember this. But they do, you know, you definitely don't have to be a reader of a certain vintage to appreciate what's going on, because they explain everything. Slott, I think, is taking a lot, you know, is obviously taking a different tact than in the Spidey books, because he does have to deal with a character that maybe needs more explanation than Spidey. And I sense that, you know, that's definitely one of his overall goals, is to just keep, you know, refreshing everybody's memory or filling in some of these gaps. Because if you're just picking up Silver Surfer for the first time, you understand, this is what happened. This is sort of why the Surfer is the way he is. And I guess that's still important for people who are just picking this up for the first time. But like I said, I'm disappointed that there's a bit of time travel in this. I still like Allred's art. I still like the style that this is done in. It's fun. It's a fun book. I would recommend this book to people who are just looking to pick up something to read, you know, for fun, as a good example of, you know, superhero comics. So this is, you know, this is definitely a candidate for my click of the week.
Okay.
One more. Burn the Orphanage, Reign of Terror number 3.
Yeah, that's not, that wasn't going to hit my reading list. Tell us about it.
So the whole Burn the Orphanage thing is pretty much couched in, if you like certain video games such as Streets of Rage, Final Fight Lights, those type of video games, you will enjoy this book because the main character is pretty much, and his friends are pretty much straight out of those type of are straight up those kind of games.
Okay.
And this storyline, which each storyline has kind of sort of been three so far, and this one it's pretty much the city's been taken over, and now everybody's under him and his friends are underground, and they're trying to, you know, find a way to strike back. In this particular issue itself, I would say this is not for the kids in certain parts because there are adult situations.
Let's face it. All right.
So just go in there with that. But there's a lot of exposition in it, and there's a couple of different couple of fights here and there, you know, in the midst of it. But it's a pretty good read, and the art is great because of I don't know who's doing the art. I don't know.
Friedman?
Yes, Daniel Friedman. That's correct. So it's picking up if you're a fan of that kind of it is real kind of what's the word I'm looking for? It's a good read. It's a fun read. Let's just say.
Okay. Tim, I saw you read Nova number 19. Anybody else?
It was all right. It wasn't the best issue of the run so far for me. I mean, the team up with Rocket was the writing was entertaining, I suppose. Mm-hmm. But
to me, that was the best part of the book. I wasn't a fan of what they're doing, how they're developing, you know, the Black Nova storyline. But you know, I'm willing to. You know, I'm curious about it. I want to see how this plays out, because if they make this kind of the I guess the Runaways version of the Nova Corps, you know, like of someone inheriting the mantle of a Nova, that would be kind of interesting.
Right. Yeah, the whole building up of the revelation of the secrets with the Black Nova. It's not like it just, even though it happened in this one issue, it's not like it just dragged throughout the entire issue.
I can agree with that.
Fix of the week time.
Oh, wait.
What do you got?
You're not done yet. You're not done yet. Yeah. Hold on.
Yeah, what about Classic? Oh.
Classic's in there mute.
Unmute.
Now what you got, Dirt?
Well, I'm trying to find it now.
Yeah, all I read was X-Men 23, so I read Original Sin 3.5, so you know, I would probably put that as my click of the week because of the reveal there.
What is that?
3.2. Yeah.
What are you talking about, Dirt? Before we jump to clicks of the week.
All right, we got a couple of them here. First up, I'm going to throw out the Star Trek book, the Star Trek Special Flesh and Stone. They wanted to...
Oh. Are those the doctors sort of... on the cover?
Yes, wow. They wanted a storyline that connected all the doctors together in one way or another.
I thought that would have come out until later this year.
The funny thing is, they basically... They understood when they were making this book that this obviously is a stunt. Like, the whole point is to bring the doctors together in some form, and then the storyline was secondary, you know? Right. So there's this medical convention with all these doctors, and Bashir and Pulaski and Crusher are on the shuttle, you know, getting ready to dock on the space station, and this virus comes in and starts turning everybody into stone, and so they're trying to find the answer, and the hologram doctor from Voyager is now working on the space station, and they have flashbacks to McCoy, and they have flashbacks to the dude from the Enterprise series, I can't remember his name, and it's basically this long, kind of drawn-out way of, well, didn't you talk to Dr. McCoy? Well, yes, Dr. McCoy told me this, and it goes into a flashback of McCoy. And then it's like McCoy had this flashback to the doctor from the Enterprise. And then it goes to, Pulaski, and she's, you know, talking about something, whatever. And it goes all through these guys having this conversation. They eventually figure everything out. And then on the very last page, Pulaski says something like, well, I don't understand where this virus came from. What's the big deal? And the hologram doctor goes, oh, yeah, by the way, I found the guy who was doing on it. I knocked him out earlier. He was basically trying to start this virus spreading throughout the galaxy, and he decided to infect all the doctors first. That way they couldn't help heal anybody. But I took care of him. It's no big deal. And she's like, oh, okay. Well, at least we got it figured out. And that's the end.
So So no queue involved.
Wow.
So no, there was no queue involved at all. There was no like time travel involved. It just happened to be.
I should have been reading this. I should have been reading this.
Yeah, I need to check this out.
But they made it clear on the last page where the hologram doctor just kind of like, oh yeah, by the way, well, this is what was happening. And he just kind of explains everything. You guys missed all this part. And they're like, oh, okay, well, now we know. And that's it. So it was kind of fun just the way that they kind of meted the fact that they were, you know, just looking for some sort of stunt to bring everybody together. The other book here I want to talk about real quickly was Doberman, number one, from IDW. And this guy is a cop from the mid-80s. So if you can think of every Steven Seagal, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Sylvester Stallone.
He's Cobra, except not yeah, Doberman.
He stops at the convenience store to pick up some beer, you know, because he likes to drink while he's driving.
He's got a mullet.
These two guys are holding up. So they're like, hey, give us all your money. And he's like, all right, well, here. And he reaches into his pocket. He pulls out his gun, and he just sets it on the table. Well, that's not my money. And he just keeps digging around. He's like, well, there's my keys. It's like, I can't find it. So he just pulls out a beer and starts drinking. And these guys are sitting there robbing the store with, you know, holding the shotgun. They're like, what the hell is up with this guy? And, of course, he beats the crap out of both of them, throws them through a plate glass window. He and his partner are going to track down these drug dealers. And, of course, his partner has got 16 pieces of shrapnel in his knee, so he's not quite moving as fast as he used to be. And they get separated, and the partner gets gunned down by the drug dealers. And he's like, oh, no, and he gives up being a cop. And, you know, it's like every – like if you saw the McBain cartoons and the Simpsons, I mean, that's exactly what this, and this is what it's trying to be. Like, it isn't like, oh, they failed and they ended up making this mockery. Like, no, they were actually trying to make a serious parody of, you know, the 80s movies. And I mean, everything about it just oozed that 80s machismo, you know, big buff cop dude movies that came out. It was great. It's hilarious. If you've ever, you know, had any sort of affinity for those movies, you got to check this out.
Does anybody
will
come
do,
on
will
say,
do.
Does anybody come on and say, you're a loose cannon?
Actually, that's a good one.
Damn actually, it, Doberman.
Yeah, there's one cop who comes up to him. He's like, everybody calls you the hero, but I think you're dangerous.
Oh, no.
And, of course, it's in the locker room while he's standing there naked, just holding the towel.
Of course, Top Gun.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Okay, I'm gonna have to check this out.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, I'm gonna have to look. I'm gonna have to pick that one up. That's funny. That is funny. Let me see anything else. Anything else we gotta throw out there? Batman Eternal number 15. New 52 Futures End. But at least the various plots are moving along. Supergirl number 33. Spoilers.
Gen 13 is back.
What's that?
I said Gen 13 is back.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Kinda, sorta.
All I gotta say is bye-bye, Red Lantern Ring. We've been joking about it for the last couple of weeks, I think. But it finally happened. Let's see. I think we covered it. So if we jump straight to clicks of the week.
Wait. One thing. Before you get to your click. My son says that the Mega Man 39 is part three of this Dawn of X with Mega Man X. If you follow the video games at all, he's Mega Man in the future. Mm-hmm. He loved this issue because in this issue, they get the glimpse of the future world of the future Mega Man X, and it blew his mind. This is the first time that he as a 9-year-old has had one of these time travel type stories where it's technically the same character, but a different version of them from the future interacting with the current, you know, version of him. And this just totally like his you literally saw smoke coming out of his ears as he's digesting the idea of the time travel and the future version of himself, meeting the regular version of himself. And so for him, this was the greatest thing of all time.
Nice.
Very cool. Very cool.
All right. Now we can get to regular clicks.
All righty. So Classic gave his click of the week.
Oh. Yeah. It's toss up between Original Sin number 6, 3.2 and, uncanny 32 because or anything 23. That, yeah, 23, sorry. Anything that benefits Scott Summers is always going to be my pledge of the week because he deserves to his due. Scott Summers, baby. Cyclops, bitch.
That's funny. All righty. I'm going to go with and I apologize to the crew and I apologize to the listeners and the viewers for getting on late. You know, work's a bitch. I didn't have a chance. I think everybody probably already talked about the Entertainment Weekly cover for Avengers. Yes. And the article about that spoiled some of the storylines and the plot. But damn it, I could not get that stupid grin off my face all day after that was released. I was just grinning the whole day. I was like, wow, that was freaking awesome. And speaking of Avengers, my click of the week this week is Avengers World number 9.
Which is also my click of the week.
I enjoyed this issue as we talked about earlier. Bill and Ted, excellent. There you go. Back to the Future story.
You know what? I will third that motion because it was pretty great.
Wow.
Mm.
Threefer. Cool.
Well, I didn't read it, so the train stops there.
Yeah, that's why I didn't pick it. Based on the artwork, I would pick it, but now I got to go back and read it. So I'm with you, Derek.
I am going to go back to DC for the Robin Rises Omega. It was the perfect. It's the perfect jump on point for anyone new, even if you haven't been reading the books or if you've only read a couple issues here or there and you're not exactly clear. It's going to explain everything. You get this huge battle in the mountains. You get appearances from the Justice League. You get the witty banter and the dialogue. You get Batman punching Shazam in the face and giving Luther a bloody nose. You get these hints of what's coming up with Apocalypse and Darkseid and all of that great stuff. So for me, this was pretty much everything I was looking for.
Cool.
So there you go.
Cool.
All righty. So that should be tonight's show. I want to thank everyone that tuned in live, or if you're listening to the audio portion of the podcast. Remember, you can tune in live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on theclicknation.com. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDogg98 and at TheClickNation. I guess Classic is at Classic Materia and at Cold Slither Pod and whatever other three random accounts you have.
No, those two are enough. Thank you guys for having me back on. It's always good to come back home. And you guys are, like I said, kicking ass, and I love it. I love you guys. I keep watching and keep listening, so I'm really proud of you guys and so glad to be back.
Also, follow Dirt at PCN underscore Dirt.
Yay!
And also go to his website, popculturenetwork.com. Follow Agent 70 at Agent underscore 70. And follow Roddy Cat at Roddy Cat and at News Nerd Sneed.
Yes.
So with that, we bid you adieu. We'll be back next week to discuss all the San Diego Comic-Con news that's breaking, along with our views and clicks of the week. Make sure to go to the website and see the updated slider images, people.
Yes.
Look at my hard work.
Yes.
I'm going to miss Hangover 3.
I'm going to miss it too. Actually, it was Hangover 2.
Oh my god.
Wow.
That's funny.
So we'll be back next week. We are the Comic Chronicles and we are signing off. Hey!